Hello and welcome to a special episode of Label Sessions Presents for FinTech Scotland, exploring the next innovation challenge for the Financial Regulation Innovation Lab, or FRIL for short. FRIL is an industry-led collaborative research and innovation program in partnership with FinTech Scotland, the University of Strathclyde, and the University of Glasgow, and is designed to harness the power of new technologies to shape and evolve the future of financial regulation across the UK and beyond. The focus for this innovation call is shaping the future of ESG innovation in financial services. FRIL is open for applications from companies with creative ideas and new solutions to help financial services companies meet their ESG aspirations and ESG regulatory commitments. This could range from ways to save time and effort, improving quality of ESG reporting, and better consumer outcomes. FRIL has 10 industry partners who have joined forces to shape the future of ESG innovation and regulation, thanks to Lloyds Banking Group, The Phoenix Group, Sopristeria, HSBC, Virgin Money, Morgan Stanley, Equifax, Barclays, Aberdeen, and EY. Today, we wanted to do something a little different and talk to some of our Label mates who are part of Label Sessions' Innovation Expert Network and ask them about ESG and financial services, their hopes for what innovators may bring for FRIL, and the challenges they see. We're in conversation with ESG innovators the likes of Victor Milligan, a global CMO who transitioned his own career to work on ESG in the United States, Max Nochran, a leader in fintech and financial services in Canada, Mark Hadfield, a consumer insights expert who's uncovering what people really think about ESG, and Manuel Maqueda, a pioneer of sustainable economics and the UN's single-use plastic policy. Let's kick things off. First up, you, Victor. Do you think ESG and sustainability is important for financial services?
Critically important. I think what you're seeing out in the marketplace right now is that you have a deep passion and interest from consumers. There's been different surveys done, but generally 63 to 80% of the consumers surveyed have deep concerns about climate change, the impact of climate change, have an interest in purchasing more environmentally sustainable products. However, there's this disconnect between that passion and the affordability of those products. So, you know, generally, we have seen a toleration of about 11% of a green premium, but most green premiums are north of 28%. And so what you have is a whole class of consumers that are essentially locked out of those opportunities. And that has gotten worse as borrowing rates have stayed high, the prices for staples have stayed elevated, and there you have a higher consumer debt burden. So I think financial institutions, if they can broker between the deep passion and affordability and play that role, it can be such a central role to unlocking new innovations, new products in the market, and give confidence to those entrepreneurs that if they were to build those products, were to make those investments, the market would be there for them.
Manuel?
It's essential. Financial services organizations not only have to raise the floor of what they're doing and how they're operating, and that's where maybe regulatory standards are, like the floor, but also raise the ceiling and also understand that they're under greater and greater scrutiny. There's no brand big enough or strong enough to not be affected. This is the world we live in, and more and more is going to be like that.
Max?
Very much so. I think a lot of banks are investing a lot of funds and resources into ESG, and they are being judged on that. So I think it's very important that ESG is included in financial services reporting and just being counted.
Lastly, Mark?
I'd actually flip the answer to this question and say, what makes them think it isn't? What makes fintech think that ESG shouldn't be on their agenda when essentially they are the key holders to the next generation of wealth? You know, that they have an opportunity to create wealth and distribute wealth beyond what it's doing now. And when it comes to ESG, you know, sustainability is a key part of that. Sustainability isn't just plant more trees and carbon. Sustainability is financial sustainability for people, redistributing that wealth in the hands of the people that do want to make a difference. So absolutely they have a role, because we all do.
Let's hear from Manuel. How do you think financial services organizations are responding to ESG regulation? Do you see a big opportunity for fintechs and startups to help make progress happen for ESG reporting?
Definitely. I think startups are the ones that are going to lead the way and innovate, just because that's how it happens. You know, it wasn't General Motors that revolutionize, you know, motor vehicles. It was Tesla. It was in Silicon Valley. And it keeps being like that. It's the startups that really have are outside of those resonant chambers, you know, where all the financial institutions live. And they're more in touch with reality and what's going on. And that's where the innovation is happening. So, you know, that's really a good place to go look and go and feel the pulse of what's going on and what's next. Definitely. The startup world is where the innovation is happening.
Victor? Undoubtedly, there's going to be a cost of regulatory compliance. And right now, the regulations really point at reporting. They're not necessarily in the enforcement of the reduction. I mean, and you can reduce it at a very tepid level and still be fine. But I think the cost of regulatory compliance, the idea that some of these regulations are not yet settled, means that you have to have a part of it that can anticipate where you think the regulations will land. So, for example, in EUDR, the deforestation regulation, there's still a sense that we really haven't settled on what really will be the regulation. One, and two, what will be the enforcement mechanism and how real would that enforcement mechanism be? So I think organizations will have to be attentive to where those regulations really land and what really will be sort of the law of the land. In the same way, if you go back to the privacy and GDPR, it took a couple of years for organizations to figure out where really is the market, if you will. I think the other part of it is that, and again, I'm going to reference GDPR, is the regulations is one part, but one of the important byproducts of regulations, it sets the customers and consumers' expectations. So it's not just that it is a regulatory compliance question, it actually starts to shape the demand in the marketplace. So I think that even if you're on the fence as to sort of your passion about ESG, you just have to recognize, similar to privacy, is that the market's going to move on you, and the market's going to expect at some point in time that you are there with an affordable, environmentally friendly product, or you will thusly lose share, if you will.
What about you, Max?
I think so. I think ESG is right now, it's a little bit of on a swing, as I call it. So sometimes, you know, before everybody was on board. Now there's, I feel like, fewer companies are on board. So I think there's now a lot of room for fintechs to plug in and respond to that.
Now, Mark, this is more specific to your field. In your work, do you see a big or small say-do gap when it comes to consumer attitudes to ESG? And what is it that people are saying they're doing or caring about versus what are they actually doing?
There's a little bit of both. I think the willing is there from pretty much everyone. We have met people who are not willing to be better, in inverted commas. But I think that there's a gap for lots of different reasons. The willing is there for people to want to do better, because who doesn't want to leave a better planet behind? But when it comes to the reality of what people actually do versus what they say, we've had some examples of people talking about, you know, kind of changes they've made in their lives, trying to reduce plastic, trying to reduce one-off products, for example. And then that's all well and good. You sit down and you chat to them about that, and then you go through the fridge and it's full of plastic. We chatted to a really interesting guy a year or so ago, and the reason it's so long ago, because it's stuck in my mind, is that he essentially had just retired, and he said, of course I want to be better, but it's not top of my priorities at the moment, because that's 5,500 years away. I need to think about 5 weeks and 5 months in the future, because inflation has just gone up, which means that my pension isn't going to last long enough, and I can't go on strike. I'm on my pension. So you end up with these really interesting tensions within people, where the vast majority of people do want to do better things for the world, but there are things that are stopping them, which might be cost, it might be convenience, or it might be just inertia or ingrained behaviors.
What do you hope an entrepreneur or innovator might develop in this field? What should innovative people in the space be thinking about? First up, you, Max?
I think that I've seen a couple of innovative companies, fintechs, starting to do ESG-only solutions in the space right now. So I'm very hopeful that the fintechs can provide solutions that the big banks, the big finance companies cannot provide today. So kind of in that ballpark, but potentially there's one fintech that I know in Canada that now does ESG only solutions. So they really focus on supply chain. They really focus on last mile delivery and tracking the environmental consequences of that.
What about you, Victor?
I've seen a lot of the innovations happen more in the B2B and within the context of the supply chain, where you have material switch out, or you have different ways of bringing more sustainable practices and products into the consumer space, but it's somewhat hidden from the consumer. I think those opportunities remain prolific because I do think there's going to be large-scale materials switch out to more sustainable materials, whether that's recycling or, you know, changing out some of the higher carbon materials for lower carbon materials. On the consumer side, I think the EV market is a really good signal for everybody because the expectation for the EV market was that demand was going to be, high demand growth was going to be eternal, but it ran right into the same issue of affordability, which is it sort of saturated the high income, high wealth segment. And as it entered into the mass market, you saw some stalling out of those growth rates. So I think if I'm an entrepreneur, I want to make sure that I'm not building something that's not affordable, that can't go into the lifestyle of the consumer. So things that are part of the daily lifestyle are things like energy use, transport, others that if that can become a more affordable solution in a day-to-day use will have high impact, obviously, to the environment and be a provide a significant market for them at the same time.
Mark?
Something innovative. So something entrepreneurial. I mean, but and it sounds like quite a glib comment, but it's a category that is not very innovative. It's a category that is kind of living in the past, dare I say, and I'm being quite provocative when I say that. You know, if you look at the challenges of the next generation, you know, if you look at consumer end banking apps, things like Monzo and Starling, they've revolutionized what's happening in people's personal finances and how people are dealing with those personal finances. What is the ESG equivalent of that for young people when it comes to mortgages and longer term savings and pensions and all the things that we're looking at? If you look at massive things going on in young people's lives, university debt. I think as a country, we're like over £200 billion in debt. We're basically a payday lender to students. They can't get on the housing ladder. In fact, a lot of them can't even move out of home and rent somewhere. You know, so you've got these huge things going on in their lives that absolutely they could be helping and linking that to this sustainable element of their future.
Finally, from you, Manuel.
Well, there's so much to be done. There's a lot of, for instance, we think of the individuals and families. Individuals and families are great, you know, more and more concerned about where, you know, their money's going. And also, they will appreciate a lot of information about, you know, how their spending is happening. And there's a lot of opportunities regarding data, from data for individuals and families to data for companies, I think. And then tying data in different creative ways to financial outcomes or just to dashboards. You know, we're social animals and people are responding more and more to comparison to, you know, what is doing everybody around you. Now, we've seen some of the, for instance, utility companies do more and more of that, provide more data in your bill. And that's led to major shifts in how people use their electricity or how they use their appliances and so on. And I think back just the amount of data that financial institutions have is tremendous. And that there's enormous leverage that could be used there, different places along the whole chain of value of money.
And finally, what challenges do you think they should take on or opportunities they should embrace? Let's hear from Victor.
So I think if I'm a financial institution, I need to think of this in a long-term context, which is I'm really not trying to maximize the profits of that specific transaction, of that specific product. But if I'm able to underwrite some of these interest rates, making it more affordable, making the lending rates go down, what I've done, and I'm able to brand to that, I've raised my brand equity. I've brought a lot of loyalty in, especially those that are new or entering the workforce who have a deep passion for this, but they have an affordability hurdle. So if I'm in a financial institution, I can begin laying down a runway for myself that has long-term benefits if I can accept the sort of short-term sort of inability to maximize profits. So I just think that's something for the finance team, the product teams, the marketing teams to come together on and see what does that look like. Because I think the lifetime value equations of that customer will well outweigh any short-term pain you might get of not maximizing margin.
Next up, Max.
I mean, I think it's the challenges that the big banks won't do right now. So the big guys will not talk about last mile delivery as an example, and the fintechs will. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about what that costs. What are the consequences, and how do we make it better? How do we solve that problem?
What about you, Mark?
I think they've got to look at the biggest challenges that we're facing as a, not just a generation, but as a society financially. There are no shortage of big issues that people are facing financially in this country and elsewhere. Housing, day-to-day food, trying to live more sustainably. I would love to buy an electric car. I'm probably bang on target market for an electric car. I could probably technically afford it, but it does not make financial sense to do that. So I think they've got to look at people's day-to-day realities to understand where can they help. Small incremental daily improvements, but also bigger help on things like mortgages or long-term loans or long-term investments like battery packs, solar panels, investment in car charging ports, etc. There's so much they can help with because every challenge is an opportunity. And as a country, we have lots of challenges at the moment.
Lastly, Manuel?
Well, one of the challenges is honesty and transparency in the communications and also knowledge. There is a massive gap in knowledge when it comes to sustainability. And I know that because, you know, I teach in the Division of Continuing Education. My students are sometimes senior executives, and I get to see, you know, the level of thinking. There's a lot of concern with giving really good answers to wrong questions because there's not enough domain knowledge. There's massive upskilling and reskilling that needs to happen at all levels of management because, you know, sustainability is not just climate change. It's not just carbon emissions. It goes way beyond that. It's not only regulation. It goes way beyond that. So there's a sore need for better understanding of what we're talking about here. So I would say upskilling and reskilling of, well, everybody, but I will start with the top, right? So that's one challenge. What are we talking about? Aren't we seeking good questions, good answers to wrong questions? And the question of how do we meet legislative standards? How do we just get by for now? How do we cause less harm? Those are questions that are not ideal in this world. Right now, we need stronger questions. Like, how do we de-risk, for instance, all of our investments by divesting from things that are linear, models that are destructive and then generate a lot of waste? Are we identifying those? How can we generate value without extraction of finite resources and generation of waste? That's a terrific question. A lot better than how can we, you know, become a little bit more efficient in whatever we're doing. So, I think a lot of the challenges are in the way people are thinking. People believe that this is about doing new things. Oh, yeah, we need to be doing new things or investing in new things. No, you need to be doing everything differently. And invest. The way you're investing has to change and the way you're thinking has to change. And that's a tremendous opportunity, but it's also a tremendous challenge because we're talking about the operating system, changing the operating system, starting with leadership.
And so concludes our look into the thoughts, provocation, and aspirations from leaders across Label Sessions Innovation Expert Network and ESG to inspire you for the upcoming challenge with Frill. Be sure to apply before the application window closes this coming Sunday, July 7th. Remember, the sooner, the better. One more thanks to Frill's partners at the University of Strathclyde, University of Glasgow, Lloyds Banking Group, Phoenix, Sopra Steria, HSBC, Virgin Money, Morgan Stanley, Equifax, Barclays, Aberdeen, and EY. And of course, our label mates, Victor Milligan, Max Nochrin, Mark Hadfield, and Manuel Makeda. We're looking forward to seeing what great ideas come forward after July 7th.